This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Fortunes of Jaded Women, a novel by Carolyn Huynh, read by Vivi Nguyen.
For Matt, for teaching me how to tell if it's real jade. 1. Wang Zung. Everyone in Orange County's Little Saigon knew the Zung sisters were cursed. They heard that the curse began in Vietnam when Wang Zung's ex-mother-in-law, Lan Huang, had gone north to visit the reclusive witch who lived in Sapa at the foot of the Huang Lian Sun Mountains. The trip across the volatile terrain was treacherous. Only truly diabolical souls who wanted to inflict generational curses on others would be able to survive. Like all slighted Vietnamese women, Lan Huang wished for the type of scarring that would make her wanton daughter-in-law and all her future kin ostracized forever. She just didn't know what that would look like. The night Lan arrived at the quiet village, she was exhausted. The fickle weather had brought an onslaught of all four seasons within a few days, and she hadn't been as prepared as she thought. The rustling wind had been her enemy one day, and her friend the next. Thankfully, her hired guide had enough shearling to keep her warm for the final leg of her travels. She begged him to take her to see the witch immediately. The more time wasted, the closer Wang would be to conceiving a child. The guide dropped Lan off in front of the tiny, all-white stone home at the foot of the mountains and wished her luck, though he wasn't sure if he meant it. The old man had taken many desperate women, mothers, daughters, and sisters, across the country to visit the witch, but he'd never once stepped foot inside. He knew better than to interrupt the flow of the universe. Only women were brave enough to tempt fate like that. Like every other French colonial home that lined the dirt road, the house had stone pillars that held up the front, like Atlas holding up the weight of the world. Wild ivy wrapped all the way around them, mirroring hands that held a tight grip on all lost souls who entered. Though the exterior appeared welcoming, the inside looked as if light had never been able to find its way in, no matter how hard it tried. Lan shivered, suddenly feeling nervous for the first time in her journey. She dreamt about this moment for months, and now that she was finally here, she was afraid. Afraid of what she would become if she went through with it. Would she still have a soul after? As she second-guessed her decision, the dilapidated wooden front door squeaked open, expelling a sinful pheromone, tempting Lan inside. The witch's face peeked out from the shadows, and she pushed the door further ajar and beckoned her. The woman was more petite than imagined, and she had a strangeness about her that Lan couldn't place. Though quite angular with her face structure, uncommon for Vietnamese people, the witch's beauty was enhanced by her dark hair that had grown wild every which way. Lan couldn't discern her age. Every time she tried to guess, she felt like her eyes were deceiving her.
"You're late."
The witch's voice had traces of irritation, but her impish eyes worried Lan the most. She couldn't read the intent behind them, but she could sense the greed, and it exacerbated her nerves.
"Hurry up, you're letting the heat out."
Lan didn't ask her how she knew she was coming. She didn't want to know more than she should, because she was afraid of ghosts and spirits following her home. She was already testing the universe's patience by being there. Lan timidly entered the house and followed the woman to the back room. Her nose crinkled at the pungent smell that cloaked the room. She spotted a man in the corner, his face hidden behind shadows and a cap. His age was also amorphous. He was busy pounding a gelatinous substance in his mortar. Behind him, Stacked glass jars full of questionable liquids and dry herbs teetered back and forth, desperately trying to stay in rhythm with one another to avoid toppling over. He locked eyes with Lan as she passed him by. The bulbous veins on his hands came dangerously close to revealing his real age. She gulped down the bile in her throat, regret once again bubbling up.
"Snakeheart," the witch said, as if responding to Lan's thoughts. "Makes men stronger, to produce more sons."
The witch hurried Lan along, past the man, into the windowless back room, and motioned for her to sit on the floor pillows. She took her own place across the circular wooden table, heated up water, and set out some cups. The flimsy table between them was the only thing keeping the gates of hell from opening on Lan, and she prayed that the table would hold the barrier, just a little while longer.
"Why have you come?"
the witch asked, as she poured tea leaves into a cup and gently drizzled hot water onto the leaves, allowing the aromatics to open up first.
"My daughter-in-law," Lan said. "She has betrayed her duties. She left my oldest son, her husband, for another man, a Cambodian man, no less. Claims that she's in love. Foolish girl."
Lan uttered tut-tuts of heavy disapproval.
"You seek revenge, then?"
"Well, no," Lan stammered, unsure how to say it out loud. "I don't want her dead.
There are plights worse than death."
"Like what?" she asked nervously.
"Well, malaise can kill you slowly," the witch said.
She closed her eyes and allowed the currents to take over her body, so she could see all that was past, present, and what was to come.
"Your daughter-in-law is pregnant." "I knew it, that whore. No wonder she left so quickly."
Lan seethed through her teeth. Suddenly, her nerves were gone, and she could only see her desire to see Wang's blood splattered all over this earth. She looked down at her own hands, saw what she was capable of, and it no longer terrified her.
"I want her cursed, Auntie. Her and her bastard child." "It's a boy," the witch said, her eyes still closed. "She carries a son inside of her."
"That should have been my grandson," Lan cried out. "That wench doesn't deserve to have love and produce a firstborn son. Vietnamese women aren't allowed to have both."
"Then tell me what it is that you want," the witch said slyly, a hint of wickedness in her tone. "Believe it or not, I can't read minds."
"I curse Wang Zung to wander the afterlife alone, unable to visit her children when she passes. And I curse all her children's children, and all those who follow, to never know love and marry poorly. And as a result, their husbands won't invite Wang to visit her ancestral altar," Lan said without hesitation. "I curse her and all the women in her family to never be able to come home." The witch opened her eyes quickly and stared deep into Lan's as she soaked in her cruel desires. The ivy that wrapped around the outside pillars tightened its grip even further. They both acknowledged the weight of the curse and the significance behind it. Daughters were unable to invite their ancestors into the house without their husband's permission, and bad husbands only meant that ancestors would be forever blocked from entering.
"Then I curse Wang Zung to only have daughters," the witch said in a controlled voice. "Those daughters will grow into women, and when those women become mothers, they will only bear daughters. May each daughter carry the weight of their mother's sins and never escape the cycle."
"Thank you, Auntie," Lan whispered, fearful, yet relieved. She felt powerful in the moment, as if she had transcended the Buddha. Her vindictiveness scared her, but there was no going back now. "What will happen to the son growing inside of her now?"
"Like I said, there are things worse than death."
A few months later, Wang Zung suffered a miscarriage. She mourned the loss of what could have been, especially when she realized that she'd been carrying a son, Grief consumed her, but the yearning for motherhood called to her, so the new lovers tried again. This time, she was fortunate to carry the baby to term. But when the midwife passed her newborn into Wang's arms, she had a look of pity on her face. "You have a beautiful daughter," the midwife said. "She has your eyes." At first, Wang tried to mask her disappointment. Not a son. But when she looked into the eyes of her daughter, a new emotion surged through her. Her daughter was made entirely in her image. It was the strangest feeling. Staring down at her tiny face, Wang was reminded of the possibilities and hardships that came with a face like that. 10 little fingers, 10 toes, a mop of black hair, and those eyes, so earnest and adventurous, willing to walk barefoot for miles and miles, all for love. Her husband, however, was vocal in his disappointment. His spine stiffened, and there was a hesitation before he finally agreed to hold his daughter in his arms. Wang told him not to worry. She promised that they'd try again for a son, and that she'd keep going until she produced him an heir. As the midwife eavesdropped on their conversation, her back turned to them. She knew that Wang would never conceive a son, but she didn't have the heart to tell her. The midwife had seen curses like this manifest time and time again. Whenever miscarriages for sons happened, followed by the delivery of a firstborn daughter, a witch's work was at play. No shaman, monk, or traveling priest from the Philippines would be able to undo the spell inflicted on Wang's lineage. All she could do was prepare herself for the type of generational heartbreak that came with daughters, because after she passed on, she may never be able to go home. Because there was nothing wrong with having Vietnamese daughters. It was how the world treated them that turned it into a curse. The predictions. 2. Mrs. Mai Nguyen. 30 years ago, Mai Nguyen first heard about the strange, petite Vietnamese woman who lived in the blindingly white, marbled mansion off the Kuhio Highway in Kauai. She heard about her through a friend, and this friend, Mrs. Dao, heard about the woman from Vivi Pham, the gossip queen of Little Saigon, at one of her infamous karaoke parties. Of course, Vivi had heard from Annie Lau, who heard from her mother's best friend's auntie. Kauai had a secret that only the matriarchs of these families knew about. The word-of-mouth tall tales of this woman had spread faster on the mainland than the whiff of a good discount sale, or boasts about whose child got early admission into the college of their choice. Within the small village of the West Coast Asian diasporic scene, from Seattle down to Orange County, gossip was the only true currency that had weight. Aside from gold bars, jade with 14-karat gold trimming, and other bits of jewelry that could be easily sewn into linings in times of war. This woman was known as Auntie He. For over 50 years, the locals would whisper about Auntie He behind her back, too afraid of what she could possibly say to their faces. Could she predict death? Misfortune? Financial ruin? Ever since Auntie He immigrated to Kauai in the 70s, the woman had been going around scaring the crap out of everyone, making off-the-cuff remarks that would send them all into a tailspin. Like that one time she walked into Bian's Bistro in Chinatown and told the owner, Bian, that he would have heart surgery soon. And he did. Though to this day, he's not sure if it was her prediction that kickstarted the heart murmurs. He didn't think to question her. Better safe than sorry when it came to dealing with psychics. However, to the businessmen who paced in the tallest skyscrapers of Hong Kong, waiting to speak to her before making a final decision, or the aging real estate broker who flew in yearly from South Africa, or the young Instagram-famous backpacker on her spiritual journey, Auntie He was known as Linh He, the famed Vietnamese psychic of Kauai. Mrs. Nguyen sat impatient, twirling her dark jade bracelet on her left wrist, calmed by its coolness. Her mother had taught her that you can tell if jade is real by how cool the stone feels against your skin. The all-white waiting room that matched the exterior of the mansion had an eeriness to it, making it seem like she was in a psych ward. Mrs. Nguyen distracted herself by observing the young receptionist, who is also wearing all white, filing her acrylics into a coffin shape. She felt a pang of jealousy at how youthful and pretty the receptionist was, and how her own hair used to be jet black and thick as rope once upon a time. Mrs. Nguyen reached up to flatten her thinning gray hair that had wisps of silver peeking out. She shifted her weight and crossed her legs, dangling off her worn penny loafers to allow her sticky feet to breathe a little, a brief respite from the hot Hawaiian sun. As soon as the clock struck 10 a.m., everyone in the waiting room looked up, hopeful that the receptionist would call their name. But the receptionist called out for Mai Nguyen. Mrs. Nguyen got up rather smugly, putting her shoes back on. She clutched her fake Louis Vuitton bag, along with the two color-coded folders that had been sitting on her lap, and made her way toward the windowless back room. A chorus of disappointed voices, with accents from all over the world, erupted. Their weary traveler faces were heavy with jet lag, and greasy from the Zippy's breakfast platter they got earlier. "Blimey! How long are we supposed to wait for this godforsaken woman? How is this woman harder to see than the Pope? Kondo wa itsu anti-san ni aimosuka? I just need 5 minutes with her. I only have one question. I'll pay extra. Llevo aquí desde las cinco de la mañana." Mrs. Nguyen openly smirked as she walked past them all. Amateurs. Anyone, who is anybody, knew that the psychic opened her appointment books only once a year, the day after Lunar New Year. Mrs. Nguyen had kept the same fixed appointment slot ever since her first visit, those 10-some-odd years ago. She had decided to visit the psychic after her sisters and her mother all stopped talking to each other. The silence was bearable at first, but then her three daughters began to leave her too, scattering to all corners of the world, despite her attempts to keep them close. The more she clawed, the more they pulled away. Mrs. Nguyen couldn't help but feel envy, watching her daughters forge their own paths in this world. She had never known what hers was, except what was expected of her, to be a dutiful daughter and mother. But when the ghosts of cackling, gossiping Vietnamese women began haunting her every time she walked past her kitchen, a gnawing pain grew, and she was overcome with a feverish desire to speak with another Vietnamese woman, just to chat about anything. That was when she flew in to see Auntie Hua, a decision fueled by a dangerous mix of loneliness and curiosity to see if the rumors were true about the psychic. Ever since her first visit, she'd never once failed to attend her yearly pilgrimages. "Dao Go." Mrs. Nguyen greeted Auntie Hua as she entered the white room and quickly closed the door behind her, her smugness evaporating immediately within the woman's presence. Though they'd seen each other once a year for over 10 years, they weren't exactly friends. Mrs. Nguyen could never tell if the woman even remembered her. The woman saw so many faces, every day for decades, that it must all seem like a blur to her. Just a sea of heartbroken faces, seeking remedies and answers for things that had no earthly cure. Auntie Hua nodded silently in response behind her big marble desk, her heavy makeup cracking under the fluorescent bulb. Her face was caked with white powder, as if she were a vintage Hong Kong ad selling face cream. The makeup was done up so badly it seemed intentional, to trick observers, to disguise her real age. In a show of faith that the woman recognized Mrs. Nguyen as a repeat client, she took out a box of tissues. She gestured for Mrs. Nguyen to sit across from her before pulling out a standard 52-card deck of playing cards. Within the spades, hearts, clubs, and diamonds, Auntie Hua was able to translate the language of the universe out of something so comically ordinary. Her delicate hands swiftly fanned out the cards in a half-moon shape, facing up, putting on a show to put guests at ease. as if they expected the woman to have some sort of physical object in front of her, a crystal ball, tarot cards, or I Ching sticks. Without looking down, the woman began speaking in Vietnamese.
"You haven't been sleeping well these days."
She addressed Mrs. Mai Nguyen of Garden Grove, Orange County, age 65, the oldest of three sisters, and mother to three daughters.
"Your wrinkles are getting worse, and the grays in your hair are multiplying quickly. At your age, you need to sleep more. Enjoy what is left of your life. Maybe try meditating every once in a while."
"Dai ai, how can I sleep, Auntie? I have demons knocking at my door every night." Mrs. Nguyen responded in Vietnamese. She felt her body preparing to unload everything that worried her. She was going to get her paid hours worth of information, even if she had to squeeze out every drop from every pore of the woman, shake down the angels, and corner the devil herself.
"You still haven't spoken to your sisters or your mother. It's been over 10 years,
the woman said, giving her a raised eyebrow. She seemed exasperated, once again, watching another client of hers not heeding any of her advice. Humans were stubborn, and Vietnamese women were the most stubborn of them all. Mrs. Nguyen scoffed.
"I'll speak to them when I get my apology." "Tisk, tisk,"
the woman shook her head.
"Careful, Ji. This might be the year you lose everything. Apologies don't mean anything when it's too late."
Mrs. Nguyen waved off her empty threat.
"I've been cursed with three daughters. I suffer enough as it is." "We are all cursed, Ji, ever since we've been forced to leave our homeland."
The woman flipped over a few cards aimlessly.
"Why don't you try opening yourself up to love? There is a man willing to come into the role of your life partner. He's a good man. Love can happen for you if you allow it."
Mrs. Nguyen looked confused, not registering what she had just said. Love? For her? Once Auntie's words sank in, she howled with genuine laughter and shook off the prediction like it was an annoying fruit fly.
"If he's kind, that means he's poor. You think I have time for love? I'm too old. Besides, I already have an ex-husband who is deep in debt. I don't need to add on another headache. Life is already full of suffering."
Auntie He opened her mouth to protest, but slowly closed it. Her face gave nothing away. Mrs. Nguyen then took out the two folders she brought in and slid the bottom file across the desk. The woman opened the folder, and out fell three photos of women. Each one had a stapled photo of a man paired with it. The photos of the women were crystal clear, while the men's looked like Facebook profile photos that appeared on a web browser, were captured as grainy snapshots through an iPad camera, and then printed out. Classic signs of a tech-illiterate Asian mother with a social media stalking mission.
"My love life is over. It never even began. Focus on my daughter's love lives instead of mine."
Auntie picked up the first photo and focused on the face of a beautiful Vietnamese-American woman in her mid-30s, whose eyes seemed emptier than the usual heartbroken travelers she had been accustomed to seeing stumbling throughout the Hawaiian Islands. It was clear that this woman had been born with sad eyes.
"Your oldest daughter?"
"Yes, Priscilla."
"She works with computers. She's done well for herself in this life, and will continue to do so into the next life as well,"
the woman observed. She felt Priscilla's hands at a keyboard, coding away late at night. She could also feel Priscilla's early onset arthritis setting in around age 50, but refrained from saying it. She might be psychic, but she wasn't suicidal.
"Priscilla made her first million at the age of 25,
Mrs. Nguyen said proudly. She raised her voice louder, just in case the woman didn't hear her properly.
$1 million, Auntie!
She never stopped bragging about her children, despite all the stress they caused her over the years. It was innate in her, like a wild beast in the forest stalking their prey.
"Priscilla just bought a house next to Mackenzie Scott, Jeff Bezos' ex-wife in Seattle. You know Jeff Bezos? The bald one? I paid for all her school in cash. All cash! UCLA! Wharton! She came out debt-free, thanks to me. But really?
As Mrs. Nguyen kept warbling on and on about her oldest daughter's perfect shiny resume, the woman paid no attention to her and continued staring at the photo, feeling very sorry for the woman with the empty eyes. Priscilla Nguyen didn't know who she was. Auntie Hu was used to all the Asian mothers who came before her, boasting about their children. But the mothers never seemed to learn their lessons, no matter what she told them. The woman closed her eyes and gave permission to the spirits to use her body as their vessel. Mrs. Nguyen's voice was soon nothing more than a distant haze, and the woman was instantly transported into a memory. She saw a young Mai Nguyen, pregnant with what seemed to be her third child. They were in a house, a bit dilapidated, each room packed to the brim with babies and several other Vietnamese families, crammed into a tiny shared space. The woman guessed that the other two young mothers were the younger sisters of Mai Nguyen, who also seemed to have their own baby girls. Outside the window on the second floor, a towering kumquat tree stood next to a bountiful orange tree, both groaning with the weight of all the plump fruit they had produced. Though the outside looked idyllic, the inside of the house was far from the promise of the American dream. "Never marry a Vietnamese man!" Mai screamed as she threw an empty glass bottle at her husband, and she turned to her two young daughters, who cowered in fear, unsure of which parent to fear more. One of those crying little girls was a young Priscilla. "You should marry Frenchmen. Make half-Asian babies who will grow up to be beautiful. Never marry a man like your father." She grabbed each of her two girls' hands and pulled them closer, her breath searing their skins with her warning. "Never, ever get married to a poor man." The woman was instantly carried back to the present, leaving behind the memory of a young pregnant Mai and her two daughters. As the clouds in Auntie's eyes disappeared, Mrs. Nguyen's voice broke through the fog. She had moved on to boasting about her other two children. "And Thuy, my second oldest, she's John Cho's dermatologist in Beverly Hills. You know John Cho, Auntie? I wonder how much he makes a year. Oh, and my youngest daughter, Tao, graduated with her MBA from Harvard and already has opened up her own clothing line in Vietnam. I'm worried she's partying too much in Saigon." The woman lifted her hand to silence Mrs. Nguyen as a headache pierced through her suddenly. She always got migraines when she was transported into memories, especially the kind of memories that reminded her of the lasting hardships of the diaspora. Though this wasn't the darkest memory she had seen in her lifetime, it still made her ill. Because in those moments, she was Mai Nguyen, and Mai Nguyen was her. Two Vietnamese women who were still enduring, who were battling a different kind of war, despite surviving one. But now she couldn't tell if her headache was caused by Mrs. Nguyen's shrill voice. She rubbed her left temple gently before beginning. "The man attached to your oldest daughter." She flipped to the photo of a red-headed, freckled man stapled to the back of Priscilla's photo and shook her head. "Bad man. Bad love. He does not care for what is behind her eyes, only for the way her eyes are shaped. He only desires Asian women. Your daughter lives in sadness. She makes decisions based on her sadness, like you did when you were young." Before Mrs. Nguyen could protest, the woman flipped to the photo of Thuy, the second oldest daughter, and to the photo of the man next to hers, who was Vietnamese-American. "He loves her, maybe too much. I do not know if she loves him back the same. She is the most responsible daughter out of the three, but the one that lives without joy. This year, she will try to find that joy." Then she flipped to the third photo of the youngest daughter, Tao, and stapled to the back of her photo was a photo of a young man who was covered in tattoos. They seemed to be partying together on a rooftop in Saigon, and she laughed off this photo.
This man is nothing. He'll always be gone by sunrise. Not serious. She is not serious about life either. But she wants to be. A man will soon enter her life, and she will want to be serious about life because of him. Be careful, Chi. She is the most selfish daughter, and she keeps to herself. Secrets surround her. But she will grow to be your wealthiest daughter. Mrs. Nguyen started tearing up.
Do you think my daughters are all unhappy? She whispered, scared to hear the answer out loud.
Yes, Ji, the woman responded firmly. Your whole family has sad eyes. Your daughters, your sisters, and your mother. Especially your mother. You all have been fighting for too long. Fight over everything. The house, money, who deserves what, who owes what to do, what not to do.
I don't know how to fix them. I've never known.
That's because you are the unhappiest out of all of them.
Mrs. Nguyen pushed her feet out of her loafers, digging them into the velvet plush carpet, hoping a black hole would open up so she could disappear into it forever. She suddenly felt very tired. Tired and guilty. Was she a bad mother? She thought about her own marriage in the moment and how it had been a marriage of convenience between two immigrants who couldn't speak English. It had always been about survival for Mai. Love and romance were reserved for the privileged.
They're not going to marry these men, though, right? Right, Auntie?
Mrs. Nguyen asked, her Asian motherly instincts kicking in. Even if the whole world thought she was a bad mother, she had to keep going. She couldn't allow her daughters to end up like her. Bad husbands would eternally trap them behind their sad eyes. She tapped at the photo of her second oldest daughter and her boyfriend, Andy.
That man makes $60,000 a year. $60,000! Do you think John Cho makes $60,000 a year? Why on earth would he choose to go to Stanford then if he was just going to end up helping children for free? How can he possibly afford to pay California property taxes on that salary?
The woman sighed heavily, watching Mrs. Nguyen shift back into meltdown mode for the 10th year in a row. She continued to rant about how these men in her daughter's lives were a threat to her empire, like a single flick to a domino that would lead to an irreversible cascading effect. Mrs. Nguyen droned on and on about how she was about to reach retirement, had suffered through menopause silently like the typical South Vietnamese woman that she was, and was in no mood to adjust her will one day to include any of her daughter's unfortunate love interests, all of whom she affectionately referred to as Jaw? Dogs. She was calling them dogs.
Date, I really don't think this man is as bad as you say, the woman tried to interject.
And look at Priscilla's boyfriend,
Mrs. Nguyen hissed back at her, continuing on as she grabbed the tissue box that had been placed out earlier.
Ngui Zhajang? You know how white men are. Do you know how many Asian women there are on this planet? He's just going to go around sleeping with all of them. And don't even get me started on Tao. She is probably sleeping with every man in Saigon. White, black, British, Korean, Australian, German. Who knows what scene she hangs out with? Always talking about expats and business. She's chowing down on the whole United Nations buffet over there.
The woman waited patiently for Mrs. Nguyen to run out of breath. When she finally calmed down, the fear and anxiety exposed themselves through her motherly eyes, and Auntie Hu was finally able to speak.
What is it that you really want to know, Ji?
Mrs. Nguyen sniffled through her tears and dabbed her eyes.
I just want to know that if I were to die tomorrow, would my daughters be okay? Will they be loved for who they are? Will they have children one day? Will they be financially okay? Will I be able to rest peacefully in the next life because they are at peace? Will I be able to come visit them at my ancestral altar because they married well?
The woman, in a moment of tenderness, reached over the table and took Mrs. Nguyen's fragile hand into hers.
You need to let life unfold as it is meant to.
So what? Just relax? Allow them to marry these hideous toads?
Mrs. Nguyen asked, her pitch rising an octave, like a small child asking their parents if they could have something sweet before dinner. The psychic closed her eyes again, giving permission to allow the currents to flow through her body. She hummed along as best as she could, waiting to see, to receive, and to be. And she saw it all. She saw the lives of all these women unfold before her, for the next year, and more. Every thread that linked together, weaving their stories, their heartbreak, their grief, their future husbands, their future children. She saw it all, including Mrs. Nguyen's future. When she opened her eyes, there was the faintest trace of a smirk.
Like I said earlier, G, this is the year where if you are not careful, you could stand to lose it all. There will be one pregnancy, one funeral, and one marriage. A complete turn around the sun by the next lunar year. But you must fix your relationship with everyone. And I mean everyone in your family. Starting with your daughters.
Mrs. Nguyen almost fainted out of her chair when she heard this. But the woman quickly jumped up, reached over the table, and steadied her. Surprisingly spry despite her untraceable age.
Tai-ai, you're telling me that one of them will get married? And one will get pregnant? Will the death be mine? Because I died from heartbreak witnessing this?
Mrs. Nguyen whispered, her mind spiraling. The woman patted Mrs. Nguyen on the back and gave a soft, sympathetic smile.
I think maybe now is the year you reach out to your sisters and mother again. All your sisters.
The color drained from Mrs. Nguyen's face instantly, and she felt her soul sink, all the way down to her penny loafers. She opened her mouth wide and bawled, accepting the tissue offered to her. Mid-bawl, Mrs. Nguyen did a quick check to see how she was doing on time. Without even opening the second folder, Auntie Hu told her that June was the best month to invest in gold and to invest in two Chinese Tesla competitors for self-driving cars. She cried even louder in gratitude.
Cảm ơn cô Hu.
As a tearful Mrs. Nguyen gave Auntie Hu two goodbye kisses on her cheeks, the psychic whispered one final last-minute prediction into her ear.
Your grandchild will be a boy.
And she squeezed her arm in reassurance. Mrs. Nguyen's eyes widened. There was no need for Auntie Hu to elaborate, because it was the type of prediction that she had been waiting to come true her whole life, the type that had always been out of reach for her mother's mother, her mother, for herself, and for her sisters. It was a prediction that could break the type of generational curses that often followed Vietnamese women to their graves and into their next life. A son to a Vietnamese mother meant good fortune, and that ancestral spirits were allowed to come home. And they'd all been away from their homeland for nearly a century. Mrs. Nguyen's memories of home had begun to fade as the years had gone on. She dabbed her eyes, stuffed her two folders into her fake Louis Vuitton handbag, and thanked the woman again. And she walked out of that windowless room without realizing it would be the last time she'd ever lay eyes on Auntie Hu and visit the island of Kauai. On her return trip home, Mrs. Nguyen sat ruminating at the airport lounge, thinking about everything Auntie Hu said about making amends. She twirled her jade bracelet. Mrs. Nguyen picked up her phone and waffled over who she was going to call first. The middle or the youngest? She decided to play it safe and go for the middle sister, the forgotten one, the former mediator of the family. She was too scared to call the other one. The good thing about the middle child was their reliability. So she dialed Ming, known as Ming Zung growing up, but now known as Mrs. Ming Pham of Garden Grove, Orange County, California, age 63, the middle child out of the three Zung sisters, and a mother to one daughter. Ming picked up almost immediately. Reliability. The most important thing you look for in your first commanding officer. For the first time in 10 years, she heard her sister's voice. 3. Priscilla Nguyen. Priscilla Nguyen had always relied on numbers as the source of truth in the universe. While her mother turned to her ancestral altar, psychics, and old Vietnamese tall tales to guide her through life, Priscilla turned to immutable truths, like finding comfort in knowing that pi is infinite, and that 3 points make a data set. Priscilla stared listlessly out the window in her corner office, facing South Lake Union, when she heard the notification reminder go off on her phone. Dinner reservations tonight with Mark, at a Thai restaurant in downtown Bellevue. She hated going across the bridge to the other side of the city, but Mark loved going to the east side. "You know there's better Asian food over there than in Seattle." Priscilla smiled through her teeth whenever he said that. It was the same disarming smile she'd given in all the VC boardrooms she'd attended the past year to raise money for her startup. It was a neutral smile, a smile that always played it safe. There was a knock at the door, and in walked Grace, her executive assistant. "Hey, Pris, do you have a second?" "Yeah, what's up?" Priscilla responded, still not tearing her eyes away from her window. She was watching the boat sail by, wondering where they were all heading. 2 things. First, the new AI research intern started today. Lily. Lily Leung from University of Washington. Aren't you two related somehow? I think that came up as a topic of conversation during her interview rounds. Priscilla looked up curiously. "Yeah, she's kind of family. A distant cousin, half-cousin, or something. It's a bit awkward, that whole situation. Just make sure she's settled for the summer, okay? What's the second thing?" "Don't shoot the messenger, but your mother left 10 messages for you." "My mother?" she asked blankly, as if she needed another confirmation. She fully turned her body away from the window and stared at Grace. Grace nodded. "I don't mean to pry, but when's the last time you two talked? She sounded frantic over the phone." Priscilla opened her mouth, then quickly closed it as she realized she didn't know the answer. Numbers, dates, events, timelines flew through her mind like a split-flap display. "I think it may have been a year," she responded softly, so that Grace couldn't hear. She was torn between feeling shame, shock, and relief. "What did she want?" Grace paused and nervously read off several post-it notes, each message getting increasingly worse. "She kept asking if you were dead, said that you're an ungrateful daughter for not calling her back this whole time. Then she left another message to stop wearing flip-flops because it will cause cancer. Then she called again, telling you not to end up with Mark because you're going to regret it for the rest of your life. There's quite a few messages left, if you want me to continue reading them all out for you." Grace's voice trailed off as she waved the notes like a white flag, hoping not to get caught between 2 warring countries. Priscilla's skin prickled at the last message. She remembered why they hadn't spoken in almost a year. She was sick and tired of hearing about her mother's disapproval of Mark. It only made her want to get married to him even more, to prove her wrong. She sighed and stared back out at the water, pretending that she was on the beaches of Bali instead. It was always a fight with her mother. Never once did she hear how proud her mother was, or that she loved her. "Did you tell her I've been in meetings all morning?" Priscilla asked in a robotic voice, her oldest Asian daughter instincts taking over, despite how much she had fought against them her whole life. "I took a screenshot of your calendar and texted it to her, because she wanted proof, but then she'd call back during every gap in between." Grace paused. "She sounded serious. Like it was an emergency?"
"It's always an emergency with her," Priscilla muttered, wanting to scream into a pillow.
She shuddered, remembering flashbacks from her childhood when her mother would get into verbal fights at the grocery store because they refused to accept her stack of expired coupons, and she wanted Priscilla to explain in English
that they had an obligation to take the coupons, because it was an emergency. The last time they had spoken, they had a screaming match at her mother's house down in Orange County. The kitchen island was the only line of defense between the two stubborn women with the same eyes, the same thick hair. Her mother chopped fruit furiously while Priscilla paced back and forth on her third glass of red wine. Behind them, the sound of a historical romance Chinese soap blared from an old television with foil wrapped around the antenna. They were arguing over the same subject. Mark. Priscilla's 3 degrees against her mother, who barely graduated high school. She attempted to fight back with her third grade level Vietnamese, feeling reduced to a child again.
"Why are you living with that white man?" her mother yelled at her. "You know he's no good for you."
"You don't know anything about Mark. You don't know what he's like. All my life, you've been dictating my love life. I can't date Vietnamese. I can't date white. I can't date black. I can't date poor. I can't date old. I can't date anyone according to you. Yet, you still miraculously want me to get married and have children." Priscilla's voice raised to a dangerous octave. "Mark is a good man. We support one another. He understands what I do for a living, and I understand what he does for a living. We love each other."
"Don't be stupid. There is no such thing as love in a marriage," her mother snapped back. "Our family is cursed. Cursed for giving me such a stupid daughter."
"I'm not you, ma'am. Thank God I'm not you." Priscilla's words got uglier, but she wasn't able to stop herself. She took another gulp of wine, feeling it dribble down her chin, completing her villain origin story. Her teeth felt stained. Her head was woozy. But in her drunken state, she possessed an infallible desire to wound her mother.
"The only curse here is being stuck with you for a mother."
There was a loud clattering. Her mother had dropped the fruit plate, but her face remained stoic. She made no move to clean up the fallen fruit. Priscilla waited for her to say something, to do something, but her mother silently turned toward the stove to blanch the pork belly, and she knew her mother would never apologize. Priscilla slammed her glass down on the counter, accidentally shattering it, red wine spilling over the black and white tiled floor. Priscilla instinctively stepped forward to apologize first, as she always did. She then heard a sickening crunch, and pain jolted through her leg. She looked down. Glass shards. Priscilla saw the rest of the mess in the kitchen. Combined with the fruit stains, her blood and the wine were indistinguishable, an estuary. But unlike the river meeting the sea, she and her mother would never meet in the middle. She looked up to catch a Chinese couple kissing in the rain on the television, set to the sounds of a guzheng, with her mother's back still turned to her. Feeling numb to the cut in her foot and in her heart, she swallowed her apology. Priscilla turned and ran out of the house, feeling a panic attack coming on. As she paced up and down the driveway, she took out her phone and called Mark, who picked up immediately. Her chest tightened, and she felt relief. Mark was her pillar. If only her mother could see these little moments with Mark. She sobbed into the phone, explaining everything that had happened. Being able to talk in English was comforting at that moment. It felt freeing. It felt like herself, and not like her mother's version of her. Priscilla Nguyen, firstborn daughter, UCLA, Wharton, CEO of her own startup. Mark didn't interrupt, tell her to calm down, or give poor advice on how to handle the situation. He just silently bought her ticket back to Seattle for the next available flight. To him, she was Priscilla Nguyen. Someone who had to learn to wear different masks depending on the audience. And he still loved her, despite witnessing them all. It had been a year since that moment between her mother and her.
"Priscilla?"
Grace asked gently, jolting her back to the present moment.
"Do you want me to pass along a message to your mother?"
Priscilla sighed. She didn't want to engage in another emergency. She was too tired to fight. She'd get around to calling her mother back eventually. One day. No. Mark and Priscilla arrived at the restaurant in separate Teslas. She had left work early to beat traffic to the east side. He texted saying that he'd be late. He was stuck at work dealing with a fire drill for some bad code they had released into production. After 30 minutes, and fending off a stressed-out waiter, Priscilla sent another text asking where he was. When he didn't respond, her mind began to wander to him getting fired by Bezos himself, or perhaps he'd gotten into a horrible accident on the freeway. She checked the app to see if there were any crashes that caused a pileup, and saw that everything was orderly. Mark arrived an hour late. He breezed in, cheeks flushed from the cold that bombarded his exposed face. He had a boyish smile plastered on. Priscilla hadn't seen this smile in a long time, not since their early years together. He took off his coat, removed his hat, revealing his signature ginger hair, planted a kiss on Priscilla's cheek, and sat down, as if everything was just fine. Priscilla tried to refrain from raising her voice. He didn't even apologize. "You're an hour late. Why didn't you respond to my text?" "You knew I had to stay late for work." His thick British accent coated his excuse like taffy. He barely glanced at the menu before he turned around to flag down a waitress, not checking to see if Priscilla was ready to order. "When I saw your message, I was driving."
"Right, but I've been sitting at this table for over an hour," Priscilla said in an overly saccharine voice, doing that thing with her smile again. She didn't ask why he just didn't do voice text. She held back. She couldn't afford to fight with Mark at this stage in their relationship. They'd been together for well over 3 years at this point. And ever since Priscilla and her mother stopped speaking to each other, an unfortunate side effect was losing touch with her two younger sisters as well. Mark was all she had left. Somewhere along the way, Priscilla had become desperate for Mark not to abandon her too. "You know how bad Seattle traffic is, especially from South Lake Union to the east side. Mercer Street is absolutely murder." He laughed it off, and Priscilla forced herself to laugh too, because she knew he wasn't going to give her the apology she wanted. A young Thai waitress arrived at their table and asked if they were ready to order. "How spicy can you make the khao soi?" Mark asked as he looked her up and down casually. Priscilla caught a glint in his eyes, and she flinched. She braced for what was about to come next.
"Five stars?"
"Make it 6. Mark winked at her. "Olympian levels of spiciness."
"Are you sure?"
The waitress raised her eyebrow and eyed Mark's skin, suspicious of any white man who tried to prove their toughness with their spice palate.
"Are you from Thailand? Like, were you born there?"
Mark asked her, rerouting her suspicions back to her, as if her authority was suddenly the one that needed to be questioned.
"Or were you born here?"
Priscilla almost kicked him under the table, but her secondhand embarrassment had a hold on her, and she felt frozen in the moment, like her legs were trapped between rocks, and the water around her kept rising every time she struggled to break free. The water was at neck level when it came to Mark these days, and she was afraid that if she continued to struggle, she'd have no other option but to allow the ocean to swallow her whole. In the darkest corner of her heart, a part of her was ready to disappear into the black water forever, especially when he did things like this. She felt utterly alone, even when someone was right in front of her.
"I've been living here since I was 3, the young waitress said, as she put her hand on her hip, staring down at Mark incredulously.
"My family is from Ratchaburi."
"Ah, Ratchaburi,"
Mark exclaimed, his suspicions turning into relief after finding common ground between them, as if he too was from Ratchaburi.
"I lived in Bangkok after I graduated from uni. Best years of my life. Who'd have thought a young boy from the Sheffield countryside who lived among the sheep would wind up in Southeast Asia, living among the elephants?"
The waitress's eyes glazed over, tired of all the white men proclaiming their love for Southeast Asia, as if it were their little secret. She turned toward Priscilla and asked her what she wanted to eat. Priscilla, feeling self-conscious, simply ordered the pad see you with tofu, 2.5 stars. She could feel Mark's eyes bore into hers. "I swear, I'm more Asian than my girlfriend sometimes," Mark said jokingly, handing the menu to the waitress. The waitress gave Priscilla a look before shooting Mark a placating smile, then walked away. Priscilla shivered, and she felt her anxiety unleash and run down her, all the way to her red-bottomed heels. She could have sworn that the waitress had given her a judgmental look, or a look of pity, the type of pity that screamed, "Why would you settle for such mediocrity?" Priscilla didn't have an answer, just like how she didn't have an answer for her mother. These women didn't know what went on behind closed doors. She needed Mark. She had no one else in her life. "I have to use the loo," Mark said. "I'll be right back." When he got up, he planted another sloppy kiss on Priscilla's head, feeling his lips against her thick, black hair. She flashed him the same neutral smile she'd given him for the past 3 years of their relationship. She glanced around the restaurant, counting all the Asian women there with their white boyfriends, and felt that same guilty, uncomfortable feeling creep up on her again. She didn't have an answer for the waitress, her mother, or for herself. Mark's cell phone dinged several times and lit up. She ignored it, but then it kept going off. As she reached over to silence it, she noticed that the notifications were from the same person. She picked it up curiously, and her heart stopped when she saw the Asian last name, Maggie Chen. As she read the clipped messages on the home screen, her hands began to shake, and she felt her family's curse rear its ugly head again at her. Her body turned cold. Here was definitive proof that the numbers Priscilla ran on their relationship were off. Not by a little, but by a lot.
"Thanks for staying behind and getting that drink with me, Marky. I swear, you're like the only cool person on our team. You like get me, you know? Anyways, it was fun getting those drinks. We should do it again sometime. Maybe even dinner?" Winky emoticon. XOXO. Mark loved Asian women. Priscilla had always known this. She just never wanted to admit it. When he recounted his dating history when they first met, his body count consisted of Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Vietnamese, Filipina, and Thai women. And she intuitively understood he was lukewarm about Asian women who had a second part to their identity, deeming them a bit more difficult, especially the American ones. But she had overlooked it all because she'd been desperate for a life where she could blend in. She was tired of being someone who made other people uncomfortable whenever they asked about her family or what her plans were for Mother's Day. She just simply wanted to throw dinner parties, order bottomless mimosas at brunch, and have weekend getaways. But the more she pretended to have that life with Mark, the more it became an unreachable narrative, because it wasn't in the cards for her to have a normal life. This was the moment where Priscilla knew she had to find the strength to pivot from this relationship. She was treading on dangerous territory of ending up just like her mother, when she had worked her entire life to avoid that outcome. Priscilla had done everything right, ran every possible simulation, just to make sure she didn't end up in this exact one. Sitting here alone in a crowded restaurant, reading flirty messages from a younger Asian woman on her white partner's phone. Priscilla laughed hollowly, Mark's phone still in her hand. She continued torturing herself, reading Maggie Chen's messages over and over again, imagining what she looked like. Young, supple, optimistic, gorgeous, slender, but most of all, uncomplicated. The durian really didn't fall far from the tree, did it? Her parents' marriage ruined her mother's life, which ruined her 3 daughters' lives, and in turn, ruined their ability to attach themselves to the safe kind of love that was hard to see through cursed eyes. Priscilla did some quick calculations, and based on her age, her career growth, and her strong desire to have a biological family soon, she knew that if she left Mark now, the chances for marriage were slim
and she'd end up sexless in Seattle once again. She'd become nothing more than a difficult woman who was past her prime. Priscilla put the phone back exactly where it was before. She pasted on that same smile, as if nothing was bothering her. Like when men would creepily stare at her and say, "Ni hao," to her on the street. She didn't flinch, yell, scream, or tell them what she really thought. "I'm not Chinese, asshole. And also, fuck off." She didn't say anything. She never said anything. Because everything was perfectly fine. That night, Priscilla slept with Mark. Much to Mark's surprise and delight, she got on top. As soon as Mark finished, he rolled over, and soon his soft snoring was the only thing keeping her company. Priscilla lay there naked, staring at the ceiling, and she quietly began to count as many numbers as she could remember in pi, hoping to reach infinity. 4. Mrs. Nguyen, Mrs. Pham, Mrs. Lum. Mrs. Ming Pham was either early or always on time, depending on who you asked. For their meeting, she chose a table near the exit. She knew the layout of the dim sum restaurant well and was close with the waitstaff, so if any physical altercation happened, she'd be able to have at least some backup. When she slipped them a little extra money, she alluded that there could be a small, tiny, little shouting match with the propensity for small, tiny, little objects to be thrown through the air. Mrs. Ming Pham, having grown up as Ming Zung, the second oldest daughter, had always known her role in the family. She was the middle child, the mediator. Mediators always needed to have a contingency plan in case things went south, as they tend to do when the Zung women gathered, which is why her car was strategically parked outside the exit door, just in case she needed a quick getaway to safety. Just in case. A steaming pot of jasmine tea was placed in front of her with some fried dumplings. Mrs. Pham poured a cup, and without waiting for it to cool down, she slurped the scalding hot liquid like a zebra at the watering hole, with alert eyes on the lookout for a predator. A predator named Mai Nguyen. She then wolfed down a dumpling, the hot mochi sticking to her gums, and she savored every bite as she reached for another, and then another. Oh, Buddha, how she loved food. She scanned around for a last-minute inspection and decided it was best to remove any sharp objects from Mai's place setting. She quickly grabbed the upside-down teacup across from hers and hid it out of view. Mai had a reputation for throwing things, like that time in the 80s when Mai grabbed an old man's cane at T&K Food Market just to throw it at another old man who tried to take the last bag of rice. Mrs. Pham also took away the spoon that was next to the teacup, and then the pair of chopsticks. After realizing